Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Back to school savings are officially in session at Tanger Outlets. Shop tax-free July 30th through August 8th and save up to 70% off the latest school styles. The best of apparel, footwear, accessories, and more. Save at Nike Factory Store, American Eagle, Gap Outlet, Crocs, Under Armour, Banana Republic Factory, and hundreds more. There's always something happening. Discover the latest fun and events all season long. Tanger Outlets, your savings destination.
Hello, welcome back to the Jet Press Podcast. My name is Justin Freed, and I'm joined, as always, by my man, Mike Luciano. Mike, how are you doing today, buddy? What's going on?
Well, it's a pretty good day in Jets fandom. There are very few of them. They are very fleeting. Like the day they got Aaron Rodgers, that was one, and then we all know what happened there. So enjoy these days, because they're probably going to make us really mad in a week when they don't get anybody in free agency. But it's free agency time. Yay. Ding, ding, diddly-doo. Okay. So we're going to go preview the whole free agency miasma, where the Jets could go, some targets they could probably try to look at, and that's probably what Joe Douglas is going to do, look at them and say they considered them and then not sign them, because that's typically what he does.
Hey, man, you're negative today. What's going on?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot to be positive about with the Jets right now, man. So
hey, they released C.J. Uzomah. Jamal Adams is a free agent. Yikes, that sucks.
That's positivity. They got rid of a guy and a bad player's not coming. Woo-hoo.
It's been a few days since there's been a negative thing about the Jets, which means
Give it time. Now that you said that, you know our history with jinxing breaking news on this show. So,
oh God.
Thanks for that. So before we jinx another bad Jets story coming, make sure to find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, while it's around, because Google Podcasts is actually shutting down soon. So if you're still on Google Podcasts, find us there, or migrate to Apple, Spotify, Overcast, wherever you get your podcasts. We're on all those sites, YouTube and TikTok at the Jet Press. For both of them, we are very thankful for however you choose to show your support. Likes really help. Good reviews on Apple Podcasts, they really help. Just drive us up those charts, help us in the algorithm. So let's just get into the free agency stuff, because pretty much everywhere you turn, there's somebody that you can make a convincing argument that the Jets should sign. They have some good cap space, about $20 million. They could do some restructures. They could maybe get rid of one or two more guys to free up some more. But this is definitely more than they thought they would have, which is all, you know, that's good. Because they started like barely over the cap. Now they have enough to at least kind of figure something out. So if we're looking at free agents, I think obviously priority number one is going to be the quarterback position. The backup quarterback position specifically. They need a real backup quarterback and not Zach Wilson. I've seen reports that they could draft a guy on day three, like a Joe Milton or Jordan Travis, and that's not a terrible idea, but that can't be your only way to improve quarterback. You need to get a veteran in there who, if Aaron Rodgers – I might just tap out if Aaron Rodgers like goes down really early again. That might be enough for me.
Why even put that out in the universe, Mike?
Because why else are we considering paying – over the end for a backup quarterback?
Oh, wow.
It's literally to prevent against this. So in case that happens and my heart shatters into a million pieces, they're going to need somebody who at least can pick up the pieces and try to make something of this season, unlike Zach Wilson. The two biggest names out there, there have been two that have been really connected to the Jets for a while now, like pretty much since the Rodgers injury. One of them being the guy that I would really love if I could just snap my fingers and make it happen. That'll be Jacoby Brissett. There was a part of me that was concerned about Brissett because he kept bouncing around from team to team, almost like kind of like a hired gun, but for quarterbacks or backup quarterbacks. Part of me is like, well, how come nobody wants to keep this guy? Why'd he go to four different teams in 4 years? And why could it be number five soon? And then I'm like, you know what? That probably shows he could pick up an offense quickly. Big guy, younger guy, got the arm, got mobility. A lot of things that – and the biggest difference between him and Zach Wilson, because there's going to be comparisons to him and Wilson, is on top of just the physical stuff, he is very turnover-averse. some may say a little bit too conservative, but he's only thrown 23 interceptions in his career in 1,600 pass attempts, which is a fantastic rate in terms of avoiding the big costly turnovers. Brissett, and we saw last year in against the Jets for Washington, Sam Howell couldn't do anything, almost disqualifyingly bad a performance, and he comes in and probably by all rights should have won that game against a good defense. Like, Brissett was diming up the Jets, which very rarely happened. So Brissett's my guy, especially because his next destination could be New England, if you look at the rumors. For some unfathomably stupid reason, despite the fact that they could get a guy like Jaden Daniels or Drake May at number three, some apparently want the Patriots to get a veteran quarterback and trade down and just build the rest of the roster. I don't know how you would sell a fan base who's watched awful quarterback play on not using the number three pick on a quarterback, but I digress. Brissett has been mentioned as one of the guys the Patriots could sign. So not only do you take a potential bridge starter away from your chief rival, New England, but you get a nice Aaron Rodgers backup in return.
Yeah, I'd be stunned if the Patriots didn't draft the quarterback. I think with the Brissett rumors, by far the most likely thing with that is they bring in Brissett, and he is that bridge quarterback for a Drake May, for a Jaden Daniels, whoever they end up getting at three. And that's kind of the guy that they're leaning on to start in the meantime, you know, before whoever the rookie is that they draft is ready to start. Or maybe the rookie just starts from day one. But yeah, Jacoby Brissett is the best option, I think, on the open market. He will be the best backup quarterback option on the open market. The hesitancy that I have with him has nothing to do with him as a player, because I'd love if he was the Jets backup quarterback in 2024. It seems like the Jets would love that as well. He seems to have some fans in the organization. That has not been a secret at this point. Of course, he almost led the Commanders to a comeback win against the Jets on Christmas Eve this past year. So I think he has a lot of fans. The issue to me is I think he'll have better landing spots. And I think the Patriots are probably going to be one of those landing spots where, sure, it'd be great for him to go and back up Aaron Rodgers, and there is a potential for playing time there because Rodgers is coming off that Achilles injury, and we don't know how he's going to hold up. But I think if he were to go to a team like the Patriots, where he can actually be a bridge quarterback, a mentor to a young quarterback, similar to how he was with the Commanders last year, like the Commanders paid him a lot of money to come in. And I don't even think he technically started a game. He was about to start.
He did a very good job, though, looking at how Sam Howell performed, though. So.
Well, I'm not going to blame Jacoby Brissett for Sam Howell not being a particularly good quarterback. But I think it'd be a similar situation like that, where he signs for $9 million a year, whatever it's going to be, and goes and becomes another bridge quarterback with a different team. I don't think that can be the Jets, but if the Jets offer him, like the Jets could absolutely offer him like $8, $9 million, and he might consider them. I think maybe a better option just for the money. Like, I think Brissett is the better player, but a guy that's also been thrown out there a lot that I'll talk about is Ryan Tannehill. Of course, Tannehill has the connection to the Titans coaching staff, and a lot of those former Titans coaches are now on the Jets coaching staff.
Keith Carter, those famous high octane post Arthur Smith Titans offenses.
Todd Downing, Keith Carter, Tony Dews. There's a lot of them, and
almost
I think
Rob Moore too. They almost got him.
Almost Rob Moore. And I think because of that connection, it makes almost too much sense for the Jets to go out and get a guy like Tannehill. He's not somebody at this stage that I would consider a super high-end backup, but I think he can absolutely do the job. I think going into last year, I still considered him a starting caliber quarterback. I think I don't believe that anymore after what we saw from him last season, but I think he's a fine backup quarterback and definitely a significant upgrade over what they've had. And I also think he'll come for a lot cheaper than Jacoby Brissett, who Brissett is probably going to get an opportunity to start or be a bridge starter somewhere. I don't think Tannehill gets that opportunity. I think Tannehill is pretty firmly a backup quarterback going into next season. And I looked at the Spotrac, whatever. I never know how to pronounce that. But the market value for him, the projected market value, it's 1 year, $4.9 million. I think that's right in the Jets' price range. It's going to be significantly less than what Brissett probably makes. And I think it just makes too much sense for Tannehill to end up with the Jets.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to countrymd.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's countrymd.com/energy.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Life can always use more Cedar Point. And right now, you can get more Cedar Point for less with the Fun Day Bundle for just $74.99. Each bundle gets you admission, parking, and all-day dining for one low price. That means more coasters like Steel Vengeance and more nostalgic fun in the boardwalk area. But you better hurry because this bundle won't last. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Tannehill is going to be 36 too this season. So
that's young. That's young compared to the starter. So.
That is as gray beard a quarterback room as you could possibly get right now with a 40-year-old backed up by the young, spry 36-year-old.
Yeah.
Tannehill, it's funny too because we make fun of the Jets and the Titans with all the coaching staff hires. I mean, the Titans offense was the Jets last year. Star running back, horrible offensive line, one star receiver, and then a bunch of nothing. Very similar. So if he thrived in that in 2022, not last year because he didn't, I guess why can't he thrive with the Jets is the way to go. Moving on to wide receiver, because if they don't add another wide receiver, I am going to just lose my shit and I just am going
they will. They will. I don't know if they're going to add a player we want, but they're going to add receivers. Maybe it's Marcus
somebody. It's going to be Jake Kumerow. So before they add Jake Kumerow, what they're going to do, hopefully, is take a look at a very deep wide receiver market if you want just like a veteran on a 1 or 2 year deal. Now that Mike Evans is gone, I feel like a lot of the difference makers are kind of gone, but there's still some good names out there. I'm not a big fan of Calvin Ridley, as I mentioned in a YouTube short that you can go and check out on the Jet Press YouTube channel that we had, because there have been some rumors that Ridley could go for over $20 million a year, which is a lot of money. And on top of the fact that I just don't think he's worth that money, like he's good. Nobody's going to say Calvin Ridley's bad, but that like 5-game stretch last year with the Jaguars where Christian Kirk got hurt and they needed him to step up, he was not Calvin Ridley level. I think that kind of showed where his ceiling's at now. So I'm not paying $20 million for that, especially when there's Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall, Sauce Gardner. You all got to pay them in the future. I'd be hesitant to do a multi-year deal. If it's like a one-year thing, let's just try and chase a ring, Calvin Ridley. I'm like, okay, I'd be open to it. I don't think he would do that, though. So for right now, I'm going to put Ridley sort of separate, and I'm going to look at Marquise Brown, who spent the last 2 years with the Arizona Cardinals. He's such a weird evaluation, Marquise Brown, because – spent 3 years with the Ravens, only 1 year over 800 yards and 1,000-yard season when he got 1,008 yards. So not exactly blowing the doors off. But
I believe that was the first Ravens receiver to get 1,000 yards in the season since Steve Smith, I think, which is pretty crazy.
I believe Todd Heap is still their all-time leading receiver. So
yeah, that's been a sad franchise for receiving talent, although Mark Andrews is great.
They keep winning, so maybe we need more of that. So. I think Joe Douglas may actually have had a hand in picking some of those guys. But anyway, Marquise Brown gets fed up because he doesn't want to play for Greg Roman, the OC at the time, demands a trade to Arizona. And he's like, all right, now I got a bigger role next to DeAndre Hopkins, my college quarterback, Kyler Murray. And then Kyler Murray gets hurt and he's dealing with Trace McSorley and Clayton Toon, and was Streveler? No, Streveler wasn't there the last 2 years with the Cardinals, but he was there the year before. But not exactly great quarterbacks, not even NFL quarterbacks, barely UFL quarterbacks,
yeah,
some would say. But obviously takes a bite out of his numbers. So if you look at just the raw numbers, where he's averaging about 49 yards a game and only 7 touchdowns in 26 games, you're like, well, this guy is certainly not worth what we're going to pay him. Maybe like close to $15 million a year. That's not $15 million a year production. You got to grade it on a curve. And the curve is going to be horrible quarterbacks and an offensive staff that's brand new from a defensive coach, Jonathan Gannon. And you, this offense was basically, he brought a guy from Cleveland to be the offensive coordinator. So it was under center, run and play actions. Like, it was not this high octane aerial circus. So that all goes into Brown's, I guess, disappointing time with the Cardinals. But if you get him on the Jets, where again, he's in, I think, his best role, which is a number two next to a bona fide number one, like he was with Hopkins. He gets that he could be the number two next to Garrett Wilson, and he gets to add the verticality that this team just lacked for so long. Now, he is tiny. He's listed, this is just a straight up lie. I don't believe this. He's listed at 5'9", 180. That's a complete lie. He's a lot skinnier than that. But speed kills in this league. I mean, look at what Miami's doing. Look at what Kansas City has done. That's how you build receiving cores nowadays. With how much they've restricted how physical defensive backs can be, if you can't cover a guy, just let him run. Just let Marquise Brown run. Aaron Rodgers will find him.
Yeah, I mean, look, I like Marquise Brown. I think so much of the wide receiver market just got thrown off in this past week after the Mike Evans extension because, one, people expected Mike Evans to hit the market. That was the expectation. I still expected him to go back to Tampa, but it did seem likely that he was going to test free agency. At least that was the report. But on top of that, nobody expected him to get, was it $25.5 million or something like that a year? Like, he got ridiculous money. And part of that's probably a product of the salary cap continuing to just inflate and go up even more than people expected. But that sets the wide receiver market. And as a result, I mean, if you go back and listen to our show from a few weeks ago, we're talking about Calvin Ridley. And I'm here saying, yeah, I think Calvin Ridley is probably one of the most realistic options for the Jets. But now in hindsight, like, I don't think that's true because I think Ridley is going to outprice them. And I don't know what Marquise Brown is going to end up making. I know his market value on Spotrac, whatever, is around $15 million. I would not be surprised if he got more than that. Like, I would not be surprised if he approaches, like, $17 million a year. And I'm just not going to do that for Marquise Brown. I'm not. So I'm at a point where I don't think, like, the top options are feasible for the Jets. Like, I just don't think they're going to do it. In fact, the only realistic, like, wide receiver two option for the Jets that I think they would and should consider is like a Cortland Sutton trade, because Sutton is going to cost less. You're going to obviously have to trade for him, give up like a fourth or fifth round pick. But I think stylistically, he makes a lot more sense than Brown or even Ridley does. He's a perfect complement to Garrett Wilson. His contract situation aligns with Aaron Rodgers. You're not signing him to a 4-year deal like you would be Calvin Ridley, or 5-year deal or whatever with Marquise Brown. Like, it's a much shorter term deal. It's a much shorter term commitment. You're not shelling out $20 million, or even if Marquise Brown makes like $16, $17 million, you're not doing that for a player who I think is worse than Cortland Sutton. I think Cortland Sutton is definitely better than Marquise Brown.
And Sutton recently fanned the flames of leaving because he took all – this is what these athletes do nowadays. If they're pissed, they take all the mentions of the team off the bio, especially, and they unfollow on Instagram, and that's what he did with the Broncos.
It's a very wide receiver move, for sure, to go to social media, and I respect that. But yeah, that would be my like top target for the Jets in terms of wide receiver two. But if we're talking free agents, Mike, anybody who's listened to the show or has followed me on Twitter knows that I'm very excited.
Oh no, I know where you're going.
Kendrick Bourne. All right. Look, I have been
Do you have like the same agent or something? You and Kendrick Bourne?
No. I have been banging the table for the Jets to sign Kendrick Bourne for literally years now. Literally since they brought in Robert Saleh and Mike LaFleur. That was the year Kendrick Bourne hit free agency. After he was leaving San Francisco, he ended up signing with the Patriots. I was like, this man makes too much sense for the Jets. Not only that, he's just so solid. Like, I don't think he's not Mike Evans. He's not Calvin Ridley. He's not Cortland Sutton. He's not a wide receiver one. He's not even a wide receiver two. But it's almost become a meme now at this point how much I really like Kendrick Bourne. But I just think in terms of just well-rounded, all-around solid players, he's one of my favorite receivers in the entire league. He's an excellent route runner with solid hands, very reliable hands, a great run blocker, just a rock-solid player. I think he's a perfect wide receiver three, and he probably won't cost that much money. He is coming off torn ACL, which that is the first time, I think, in his career he's ever missed time or any more than like a game or two due to injury. So he's been a pretty durable player up until that point. Looking at his market value again on SpoTrack, SpotTrack, it's like $5 million a year. And if that's all it takes to get Kendrick Bourne, please, please do it. He obviously still has connections to Robert Saleh dating back to their time in San Francisco. I wouldn't hate that at all. I don't think that should be their like big, big wide receiver addition. I don't think he's going to raise the ceiling of the wide receiver room that much, but he will absolutely raise the floor a lot higher than it was last year. And that, to me, is one of the most important things, because you cannot have a situation where you have one receiver that you can rely on out there. Like, Kendrick Bourne gives you a second reliable receiver.
So would he be wide receiver two or three on your depth chart?
So in my theory, here's my two perfect
scenarios. You're going to have to draft a guy too, probably, right?
Sure. In my theory, here's my two scenarios where I would be happy with the Jets addressing wide receiver room. One is you trade for Cortland Sutton, and that's your big receiver addition. That's your wide receiver two. And then maybe you sign a Kendrick Bourne, or maybe you just go into the draft and get another wide receiver there, and you go with Alan Lazard and your rookie, you know, mid-round pick, whatever, as your wide receiver three, wide receiver four. I'm okay with that. Sutton's a pretty big addition. I'd be happy with that. The other one, if they don't trade for Sutton, is you probably got to sign two mid-level receivers. And the guys that I'm looking at, Kendrick Bourne, Tyler Boyd makes a ton of sense. Now, I know Boyd and Bourne can kind of occupy that similar slot receiver role. They kind of, their skill sets are a little redundant, but Boyd is another one I think they can get a really good value on, because I saw his market value is projected like $8 or $9 million a year, which, again, not a guy who's going to significantly raise the ceiling of the offense, but significantly raises the floor. And that's really what I'm looking at here, because as much as like I'm excited Aaron Rodgers is coming back, I am relying on Aaron Rodgers, and I think the Jets have to some degree, to elevate his skill players around him, much more so than Zach Wilson or any of the quarterbacks could last year. You don't need necessarily two high-end wide receivers, but you need to raise the floor. There's only so much Aaron Rodgers can do with guys like Jason Brownlee, Xavier Gibson, Randall Cobb in the year 2024. But you give him a Kendrick Bourne, you give him a Tyler Boyd, that raises the floor, and I think Rodgers helps elevate that ceiling of the offense. So I wouldn't be particularly concerned if the Jets don't go out and they get like a true wide receiver two. They add a couple of wide receiver threes, and then they just rely on Aaron Rodgers to elevate a room with Garrett Wilson. And then I would say if you sign Kendrick Bourne and, say, Tyler Boyd, you now have a room with Boyd, Bourne, and Alan Lazard. That's three wide receiver threes, I would put it. I know Lazard was awful last year. I think Lazard should be a wide receiver three if he can figure out what the hell went wrong last year.
There's no possible way he could be that bad again.
Agreed. There's no way he should be as bad as he was last year. So you give me a room with Garrett Wilson as your wide receiver one, who's a top 15, top 10 receiver, and then three wide receiver threes with Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback, plus Tyler Conklin and Breece Hall, I'm cool with that. I'm very happy with that wide receiver room. I'm very happy with that skill position group. I don't think they need a Calvin Ridley in that instance. And I think you could sign a guy like Bourne and Boyd for less than what you'd pay Ridley, or even potentially less than what you pay Marquise Brown. That's where I'm thinking with the Jets wide receiver room. And of course, you could also address the position day two, day three of the draft, which I honestly would like that they do, because this is such a good wide receiver class. But that's my plan of attack to fix the wide receiver room. I don't know what you're thinking.
Well, I'm going to go and at least transition to the next top, because I like your plan. I would like one maybe big name addition, just because I feel like having that 1-2 punch really gives them all the oomph they need. They could do more two tight end stuff with Ruckert and Conklin. If you just that way, it's not just spread them all out for why, which Hackett doesn't really like doing anyway. I know he's stupid, but he's not going to change his game plan. So
really quick, I'll throw out two. The wild card in this is if Corey Davis comes back, because that is a possibility that's been floating around. There are rumblings that Corey Davis, I know it was reported by Connor Hughes that the Jets were in discussion with Corey Davis about potentially returning last year. And Connor even said himself that he thought if the Jets were legitimately making the playoffs, that Davis would have come back. So it sounds like the door is open there. I don't know what's going to happen, but that's another one where I would say Corey Davis, high-end wide receiver three, that'd be a good addition.
Yeah, and I'm also going to date Tyra Banks soon. So that's
where we're at there. I mean, this one seems a lot more plausible. Come on.
Hey,
I mean,
what do you call me, ugly or something?
No disrespect. Isn't she married? Isn't Tyra Banks married?
I don't know. Not after she sees me. But
wow. All right. Yeah, I'm going to say I think that it's more likely that the Jets bring back Corey Davis. Sorry, man.
if Tyra's legal team is watching, I apologize. ISU running back for life. I hope that's a Breece Hall reference. With the Evans contract, I'd rather see JD sink all the free agency money into the offensive line to position the Jets to take a weapon like Brock Bowers or Roma Dunze at number 10. here's the, we're going to go talk about the offensive line now. I don't hate that, but the only issue that I would have is this class for free agents, especially a tackle, is very thin.
Yeah.
So like there's no guy you could sign like a 5-year, $100 million contract who just slam in at left tackle and you're good. There's no guys like that. There's an element of risk pretty much everywhere. Like the no doubt probably best player in this class at tackle is probably Tyron Smith, maybe a Hall of Famer, but he gets hurt all the time.
And there's a lot of doubts with that, no doubt, because of the injuries.
Exactly. So, but I mean, when he plays, he's a no doubt. But like,
sure,
the only doubt is the injuries. So looking at the offensive line, honestly, I'm probably going to have to go with a guy like Trent Brown, which that sounds weird coming off the whole Mekhi Becton thing. That doesn't mean you should just never draft a big offensive lineman ever again. It's just Mekhi Becton couldn't stay healthy, and then injuries robbed him of his mojo, like Austin Powers, and he just stunk. So there's a lot of Austin Powers references. Hackett disease is creeping into my brain.
You reference it at least like once a month on the show.
I don't even like those movies. I haven't even seen the last two. So
Gold all I know member.
Is in the second one he gets his mojo stolen. So
sure. Goldmember is my favorite. That's a great one.
Is that the one with Beyonce?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, now that that's cleared up, back to offensive line talk. Trent Brown, really weird how the Patriots dealt with him last year, because he was a reliable starter when healthy again for New England, for the Raiders. Big, strong guy, mauler, still can really run block pretty well, I think. Pretty mobile too for 6'8", 370. You don't always get that in 6'8", 370. He got hurt last year, and Belichick, in his infinite wisdom, decided that he was like rotating guys in and out. So sometimes he'd start, sometimes he wouldn't. He'd be healthy. He'd be what? It was a really weird thing. And Brown's gone on the record about how he thought they were effing with him, I think is his exact quote. You could fill in the F. You know, I don't need to do that for you. He was not a fan of how his tenure in New England ended. So he probably needs just a fresh start. At this point in his career, Brown is 30 years old. He's going to be 31 in April. He's been with New England for 4 years, never won a championship, been with San Francisco for a while, never been, like, been on good teams, winning organizations, never competed for a ring. I think he's going to probably prioritize that. So if you go to the Jets, not only do you get a shot at a ring with Aaron Rodgers, not only do you get a team that'll probably pay you well because they're desperate, they'll probably overpay. If another team presents a similar offer, they'll probably one-up them there. And you're pretty much guaranteed a starting spot. And he's played both tackle spots in the past. So you can kind of mix and match him wherever you want.
Yeah, I kind of want to talk about the comment from ISU, the RB4, I don't know, the Breece Hall guy from before. And it kind of relates to what I'm about to say here. I think it's like, yes, the Jets are going to put a lot of money into the offensive line in free agency, and that's going to be their plan. But I think the important thing to keep in mind is the Jets are not going to back themselves, or at least they shouldn't, and I'd be surprised if they did. They're not going to back themselves into a hole or a position where they feel that they need to address a specific position at number 10. That means they will target wide receiver and they will target offensive line in free agency. They're going to address both. They're going to sign a left tackle, whether it's a Bakhtiari, whether it's a whoever. They're going to sign somebody so that when come the 10th overall pick, come late April, they do not feel like they have to take a specific position. And if a guy's there that they want, they're going to draft him, because that's how Joe Douglas has always operated. I expect it to be the same this offseason. I don't think that's going to change. Also, really quick, get to a comment from Josh Kerr before I talk about my offensive line guy and I talk about Trent Brown a little bit. Is asked about Xavier Gibson, kind of relating to the wide receiver conversation. Do you guys have faith that Xavier Gibson can develop?
No.
Oh, that's mean.
Not into anything that's going to move the needle for the Jets. Like he's what he is. He's a nice gadget return guy.
Yeah, it depends on what you mean by develop. Like I don't think this is a mean thing to say. I think his ceiling is a Braxton Berrios. I don't think that's bad. That's a reliable, productive NFL player who should play 8-9 years in the league. You know, just if he can continue to develop as a returner, he can provide value on special teams. And right now, I don't think he's anything more than a wide receiver 5, but at his absolute ceiling, sure, you'd love if he could develop into a starting slot receiver. I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't even think he's guaranteed a roster spot going into next year. I think he'll make it, but there's a lot that could change until then. But sure, I mean, I think he can get better. I think there's room to grow, but I wouldn't rely on him as any – significant part of the future. Also, Brian in chat said, I agree. Jets should be signing the guys in free agency. They need to draft Jared Verse in the first round. If the Jets draft another edge rusher in the first round this year, I mean, I've already lost all faith in the regime. I don't know. I don't want to throw out a caveat because I think it's actually possible. Just please just don't do it. Please don't do it.
I like Jared Verse a lot. So I'd be like, why?
But he likes Will McDonald too. And like, you know, who cares? Like, who cares? He didn't barely play last year. And now he's probably going to be the reason that they let Bryce Huff go. So, but anyway, back to the offensive line. Yeah, Trent Brown to me, I have, like, there's obvious red flags with him because there's red flags with every offensive tackle in this free agent class. To me, I worry about the Jets getting, like, scared away because of Mekhi Becton and because of what happened with Becton. Because Brown is a very large human being. He is, what, 6'7", 6'8", 370
pounds. Don't call a guy fat. Come on now.
He's not even fat. He's huge. He's 6'8", as well. The man is massive.
That sounded worse than fat. He's huge. You got to see this guy.
He's just big all around. Like, he's a big person. He's a big human being. And, like, I wonder if because of that and because of the injury concerns, because there's genuine injury concerns with him. He has played in more than 11 games once since 2018. He has played in more than 11 games just three times in his career, and he's been playing since 2015. That is a serious concern to me. And obviously you get those same concerns with Tyron Smith. You get the same concerns with Bakhtiari. Brown is slightly younger, but he's not young by any means compared to those guys. I still think Tyron Smith would be their best option if they're going to go that route. I don't think it's their most likely option. I've said it before. I'm not the only one that said it. David Bakhtiari makes the most sense. I would be surprised if the Jets were not active in David Bakhtiari's market. And I don't hate it. Like, I don't hate it because I think it makes sense to add him to the room as a potential option. But you're not locking yourself into him being your left tackle for next season, because if they go into next season and he's your locked in starting left tackle and they're relying on him, that's a mistake. But I don't mind.
That might be worse than signing Becton again, if we're being honest.
I agree. I actually agree. Bakhtiari is even less reliable than Becton, so I agree. But I think it makes sense to add him to the room, and then you're not pigeonholed into drafting an offensive tackle at 10, but you're probably going to do it. But if not, and if they really want to address left tackle and free agency or tackle in any way, the top two options, I mean, Tyron Smith, you already mentioned, I think he makes the most sense to me. He is a better David Bakhtiari. He comes with fewer injury concerns, and I think he is just a more reliable player at this stage. You still have the injury concerns, but he's still one of the best left tackles in the NFL when healthy, and it's not like he's played one game in two of the last three seasons like Bakhtiari. And then the other one that somebody else mentioned in chat too is Mike Onwenu. From the Patriots. He is a guy who has experience playing guard and tackle, but he did start last year at right tackle. I believe he was at right guard the year before that. He's shown he could do both. I imagine since he's on the free agent market and it's not a great tackle class, he will get paid as a tackle. He will be paid to start at right tackle for some team next year. Maybe that team is the Jets. I doubt it. I don't think they're going to make that move because I think it would just be so much money for them to sign a guy like Mike Onwenu. I think his market is going to explode. But if they were to sign him, you'd probably have ABT at right guard. You'd keep him there, which is probably a good thing, even though I think it makes more sense given the situation this year to move him to tackle. But if they really wanted to keep him at guard, that's something they do. But yeah, I don't know. I threw out a bunch of names there. Tyron Smith is probably my favorite tackle option. But I think if we're being honest with ourselves, it's going to be David Bakhtiari.
I want to get to a comment too from Jet Plane Crash on Twitter or X or whatever it's called. Now, by the way, thank you. There's a lot of viewers from Twitter and X today, so thank you guys for tuning in here. Jet Plane Crash, the fact we're pleading for a kicker and punter to come back next season is pathetic. They were good.
How dare you? It is not pathetic. Thomas Morstead is one of the best players on the Jets.
Thomas Morstead stood up to Mecole Hardman.
Thomas Morstead stood up for his own team. Greg Zuerlein set the record for the highest field goal percentage in a season by a Jets kicker last year. Those guys deserve to come back.
The comment I really want to get to is he said, I don't think the attraction to come here is a real thing. Certainly not coming to the Jets as an organization, but coming to Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Rodgers 1 and 2 money. Like, those things will both influence guys.
Yeah.
Like, I think even with Rodgers being what he is, like, he has some pull. He has guys who want to play for him, just to say they play with Aaron Rodgers, especially offensive players. Now, I know it doesn't always materialize because he puts such an influence on guys that he likes and guys he's familiar with, but that hadn't stopped guys from wanting to try to play with Aaron Rodgers. Look at how many guys in the draft free agency. Oh, Aaron Rodgers is great. I'd love to play with Aaron Rodgers. Like, that's a real thing. So that's what the Jets got to lean on. Is, you know what? What are you going to do? You're going to take a contract that's the same amount of money. You're going to go play for a 5-11 team. You're going to go play for maybe a rookie quarterback or a bridge guy, and you're going to get thrown into turmoil, or you compete for a championship with Aaron Rodgers. They're not the favorites, but you're in there baseline because you have Aaron Rodgers. Like, that's a pitch that appeals to some.
Yes. Rodgers still has a lot of pull around the league. Look at it this way. A lot of the younger guys in the league right now, guys that are just in free agency for the first time, they grew up watching Aaron Rodgers. A lot of these guys idolize them. I mean, listen to Caleb Williams. He called Aaron Rodgers his football goat. Like, I know Rodgers' personality.
I felt really old because I was watching the combine when Xavier Worthy broke the record, and he said, well, when I was a kid and I was watching John Ross break the record, and I said, what? When you were a kid, what?
That's crazy. I was in.
Oh, that hit me. I feel like I got shot in the chest. I'm like, oh, that's no.
Wild. Yeah, that's wild. I think we were in college when it happened. That's crazy. That's wild. But yeah, he has a lot of pull still. I know that he didn't really use that pull for good use last year, and he just kind of brought in a lot of his buddies. But there are a lot of people that do want to play with him. I mean, not that Dalvin Cook was a good signing. We've been on record saying that, obviously. I was on record saying it as of June last year. But Dalvin Cook, one of the biggest reasons he signed with the Jets was to play with Aaron Rodgers. There are going to be other guys this year.
Play with Aaron Rodgers.
Who'd you say what?
Mecole
Hardman. Alan Lazard wanted to play with Aaron Rodgers. I know the track record hasn't been great, but there are still players around the league who do want to play for Aaron Rodgers and, more importantly, want to win a ring. And I think that there is an expectation that the Jets will at least try to compete for a Super Bowl next year, which I know, you know, every team is trying to win a Super Bowl, but that's not the case. Like, every team in the NFL is not going all in to win a Super Bowl. So I think there's still some pull there with Rodgers, and there's still some pull with the Jets. Also, wait, really quick. Here's from ISU RB for Life again on YouTube. Said, here's a scenario for you. Re-sign Morstead or draft Torrey Taylor in the 7th round. Now, look.
Morstead.
I'm going to be completely honest. I had to Google who Torrey Taylor is. I didn't know he was Iowa's punter. I'm not up to date on the top specialists in the draft this year.
Allegedly.
Jets aren't going to draft any of them because they have two.
Allegedly, he's one of the best punting prospects in years. But you know who else was? It was Brandon Mann.
Braden Mann, and by the way, Braden Mann was low-key good with the Eagles, so I don't know what's going on.
Of course he is. He left the Jets. It always happens.
Like all the Eagles fans on Twitter are like, re-sign Braden Mann, he was great. And I'm like, what a world. but no, the answer is re-sign Thomas Morstead. You're not wasting any draft pick on a specialist when you already have two of the best specialists in the league. Absolutely not. No shot.
So moving back to, always staying on the offensive line, rather. Looking at offensive guard, this is the spot where you add in free agency because there's a lot of veterans. There's a lot of guys who may not get a second contract with their original teams. Jonah Jackson has been thrown out as a guy. If I'm looking at just veterans, and there's going to be some competition for him, but if they can land Kevin Zeitler, I think that would be a coup of a signing. Comes from Baltimore the last 3 years. Now, he said he wants to return. And the Ravens right now only have one guy pretty much locked in on their offensive line, Tyler Linderbaum, the center. Because John Simpson's a free agent. Zeitler's a free agent. Morgan Moses is 33. He might be a cap cut. It looks almost assuredly that they're going to cut Ronnie Stanley just to save some money after the Justin Madubuike franchise tag. So they want Zeitler back, but they also – there's that period where you could try to sign guys to like 1 or 2 year contracts before they hit free agency. They did that with Nelson Aguilar. Didn't do it with anybody else, including Zeitler. Mm-hmm. So to me, that says, well, maybe they couldn't get a deal done, and he's out there for any team who wants him. Well-traveled guy with Cincinnati and the Giants before, and finally makes a Pro Bowl after years of Pro Bowl-level play. Yeah. Very good run blocker and a run-heavy offense. But, I mean, you go watch some of those pockets Lamar Jackson had. I mean, he could have read a chapter book in the time it took him to throw a ball, and Zeitler was a big part of that. Because of his age, too, you're not going to overpay for a 34-year-old guard, but you're going to get a high-end producer.
Yeah, I love Zeitler, and that was one of the things when I was looking him up. I was stunned that last year was his first Pro Bowl because, I mean, he's going to be 34, I think, by the time that week one comes around, and he's been playing at a high level for pretty much his entire career. Like, you want to talk about durability, consistency, reliability. Kevin Zeitler is all of that. He has the experience.
Brandon Cooks of the offensive line. Yeah, Brandon Cooks never made a Pro Bowl.
That is crazy. That's how many 1,000-yard seasons he had? Like four, probably three or four, and he's never made a Pro Bowl.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
He's probably going to get 10,000 yards next year, Brandon Cooks.
Yeah, well, he's played so long in the league because he was drafted when he was so young.
And then the Jets, I remember he was the first – that was the first year, was 2014. I actually started doing like looking at the draft because I had nothing else better to do in high school. And I remember that was the guy I wanted so, so bad for the Jets, and then they took Calvin Pryor. Okay, so.
All right, well, we don't gotta rehash that. We'll save that for another time. But, yeah, I love Zeitler. I would be absolutely, like, through the moon, through the roof, over the moon. Is that the – I think I combined two phrases there. But I would be very happy and very excited.
Through the moon.
I'd be through the moon. I would go right through the moon if the Jets signed Kevin Zeitler. I would love that. Obviously, Douglas still has some ties to the Ravens organization, so maybe there's a connection there. I do imagine that the Ravens will do everything that they can to bring back Zeitler, but if he is on the market and he slips free and he's out there to sign, it won't be cheap, but I would absolutely love if the Jets did that. There's also quite a few, and I think we talked about this last week, there are quite a few really like younger guards who are hitting the market who are very good players who are looking for their second contract. Guys like, I mean, Jonah Jackson, you mentioned, Kevin Dotson had a really good year with the Rams last year. The guy I'm going to focus on is Robert Hunt from the Dolphins, but honestly, any of those dudes, I would be very happy with the Jets signing. Robert Hunt, he, I believe, started his career early playing tackle for the Dolphins, but has shifted more to right guard. Very durable player up until this past season. He missed some games with a nagging hamstring injury, but he had played, I believe, in every single game of his career before that. Just a rock-solid player, graded out very well with PFF, only allowed a single sack last year. I think he was like a top six or seven guard in the NFL by PFF in 2023. I love Robert Hunt. Young player, too. He's only, 27? So you could sign him realistically 4-year contract, give him, I don't know what it'll end up being like. What is Spotrac projected at? I'm going to guess like $13 million, $12 million a year. Does that sound reasonable? I think for him, $12 million, $11.8 million is what they project for 4 years. So that seems reasonable to me. I would absolutely love that if the Jets did that. You sign Robert Hunt, have him start at right guard, move AVT to right tackle. Then you keep Tippmann at center. You probably got to figure out, obviously, what you're doing at left guard. You probably got to sign another interior guy there. There's a few options they can go with that. But left tackle, Bakhtiari, draft, whatever. That's how I would think about addressing offensive line going forward. Maybe a mid-round pick at guard as well to help out with depth. But Robert Hunt, Kevin Dotson, Jonah Jackson, there are a ton of younger guard options hitting the open market. Jets got to land one of those guys. Hunt's probably my favorite, but there are a few really good options.
Apparently the Bills released Jordan Poyer.
They did. I only find it funny
because I remember he went on this big rant about how he was never going to sign with the Bills again because he hated living in woke New York or something like that. And then he had to sit back because nobody signed him.
I was going to throw out there that Jordan Poyer is buddies with Aaron Rodgers because of the ayahuasca shit. They have the connection.
Common interests off the field.
Poyer's been very outspoken about how he's
not the reason that you want to be friends with Aaron Rodgers. It's for the other stuff.
Poyer is still a very good safety. I know he's had some injury troubles, but he's a very good safety. I don't think the Jets are going to pay a lot for a safety, but there's a connection there. I was going to talk about it when we got to safety because I saw that earlier. But, yeah, that's another potential safety option for the Jets.
So moving on to the defensive side of the ball, we're at least going to start in the defensive line first.
Yep.
They don't need another edge rusher. They're good there.
They still might sign one. I would not be stunned if they signed one.
I mean, if they let Huff go and they get like a backup, it's like whatever. But
you know, Vinnie Curry-ish type signing, not Vinnie Curry.
Yeah, another Solomon Thomas. I don't have a problem with that. But, you know, I have a problem if they pay like, you know, Bryce Huff money for not Bryce Huff. But I'm looking at the defensive line and it's just they need a run stuffer. I know Al Woods didn't work out. Maybe he's just like a pure nose tackle. I know they want some guys to play one tech, but like you just need somebody who can eat up space and stuff to run. Even if the pass rush upside limited, just have more than Al Woods, and I think it'll be fine. That was the problem, I think, with Woods, because he could stuff the run. The problem is he just had literally zero pass rush upside.
Yeah.
So anything above that, I think you can get a more viable rotation guy. And I'm looking at Greg Gaines, who proved me wrong because I had him as like a UDFA grade when he got drafted. And here I am advocating for Greg Gaines to get picked because he spent 4 years with the Rams. And he's a little bit of a wild card because he has two really good years. Gets 9 sacks, about 90-ish tackles, good run defender.
He had 9 sacks in a year? Greg Gaines?
In 2 years.
Oh, I was about to say, I'm like, No.
In a 2-year span,
he had 9 sacks. What did I miss? That's crazy.
So, yeah, it wasn't that freaky. But again, people were skeptical because they're saying, well, you're playing next to Aaron Donald. So you're never really getting, you know, like double teamed or get guys focused on. You're like, and I get that. Then he goes to Tampa, only starts two games, and he's just firmly like a rotational backup guy. I know they had Vita Vea there too, but so Gaines is a little bit of a concern because you're like, well, you know, is he, can he really dominate on his own, or is he just the product of playing with other good defensive tackles? Good news for the Jets is they don't need to answer that question because they have Quinnen Williams. So if you put him in next to Quinnen Williams, he can just be as good as he was with the Rams. He's not going to be like a 15 sack a year interior guy, like a Warren Sapp type. He's just not that kind of player. But he can, if he gets like 2-3 sacks a year, there's nothing wrong with that. He can definitely pressure the quarterback a little bit. So you get him in there. Not as good a pass rusher as Quentin Jefferson. Not as good a run stuffer as Al Woods. He's kind of like if you merged them together, this is kind of what you would get. So if you're going to lose one or two of those guys, good replacement to get.
Yeah, honestly, even if they bring them both, like even if they bring back Quentin Jefferson and Solomon Thomas, I still want to see another defensive tackle there, like a fourth defensive tackle, because they were rotating guys like Tanzel Smart and Jalen Holmes or whoever it was last year. And whenever they were out there, it was a net negative. So maybe they addressed that in the draft. But either way, I think Solomon Thomas is probably going to get brought back. He just has a lot of fans in that locker room. He's a well-respected leader or locker room guy. I think he's back. Jefferson, I think they'd like to bring him back. It'll depend on what happens with – it could be like a Sheldon Rankin situation where he just makes a little bit more than they expected or a little bit out of their price range. And if that's the case, then absolutely defensive tackle becomes an even bigger need than it probably already is. But I agree with you. They need a one tech. They need a guy who can fill that run-stuffing archetype, but somebody who provides a little bit more athleticism and pass rush upside than somebody like Al Woods. Because Al Woods, I mean, even in his day, even in his prime – was basically just a one tech or just a nose tackle, a run stuffer. As Brian in chat points out, I see you bringing this up. Gaines also used to be a great special teams player when he was a backup. So that could certainly help. Oh yeah. Didn't he have like a few blocks? I think I remember that.
He did. Yeah. Like he blocked a couple.
Fields, yeah. I think I remember that. Yeah. So yeah, maybe Brant Boyer is pounding the table for Greg Gaines. That makes sense. One guy who I'm looking at, and a lot of Jets fans have been talking about him in recent days since he was released, unfortunately on his birthday by the Jacksonville Jaguars, it is Jets legend Foley Fatakasi.
Happy birthday to you. Now get out of here.
Happy belated birthday to Foley Fatakasi. He was released by the Jaguars this week. I would absolutely love if the Jets brought back Foley Fatakasi. He has experience playing in the exact same scheme. He spent a year with Robert Saleh in 2021. That was his last year with the Jets. The year before that, he was, I believe, like the second highest run defense grade amongst PFF interior defenders. He was one of the best run stoppers in the game when he was with the Jets in football. Unfortunately, didn't really work out in Jacksonville. Like I can't say I've watched a ton of Fatakasi tape from the last couple of years, but PFF hates him. I'll tell you that. PFF absolutely hates him. His first year with the Jaguars, he had like a 44 PFF grade or something like that. It was like one of the worst.
That's preposterous.
It's crazy. It was one of the worst run defenders in the league. I will say, though, PFF also hated Solomon Thomas and Quentin Jefferson last year, and I thought both of them had very good seasons. So take that with a grain of salt. I can't say I've watched a ton of Fatakasi over the last couple of years, so I don't know how much he really has left in the tank. Although I will say last year, he was, I think, top 9 in run stop rate amongst defensive tackles. So he still got it as a run defender, at least according to that. But Fatakasi during his time in the Jets was obviously a very good run stopper. And that's kind of the archetype that they should be looking for. I think he offers more athleticism than a guy like Al Woods. Again, he's not going to be a Quinnen Williams or a Quentin Jefferson that's getting 5, 6, 7, 8 sacks a year. But he's someone who can offer a little bit of upside as a pass rusher. He's more athletic, which you really need that athleticism in this Robert Saleh scheme because it's such a – they ask so much of the defensive linemen that they're just constantly pushing upfield. And I think a guy like Fatakasi, even – I think he's going to be 29 this year, still has that athleticism and obviously has history with the organization. He's a New York guy. I would love if they brought back Foley Fatakasi.
He was an okay run stuffer. The problem was the Jaguars didn't have any other run stuffers, so
– yeah, their run defense sucked.
Right. It was like him and kind of nobody else. Now they're bringing Josh Allen back, but like those two alone can't just beef up the entire line. Right. So I think y'all are unfairly maligned.
Yeah, and Allen's not even an interior guy anyway, so he's
and Mike Caldwell got fired anyway, so I think they realized there were some issues in Jacksonville. Going to safety, we could talk about Jordan Poyer because that's hilarious.
Yeah, we could.
But if I'm looking at it, say this, I'm not even trying to be like funny or hyperbolic because we're on a show like. It stunned me when Quandre Diggs got released by the Seattle Seahawks because Mike McDonald coming in, defensive guy from Baltimore, they did as much three safety stuff on the field at one time as any player in the league. any player, any team in the league, excuse me, Kyle Hamilton, Marcus Williams, Geno Stone, who had 7 picks. You'd think this would be a no-brainer. You keep him, especially if you know you're getting rid of Jamal Adams, but nope, got rid of both. Got rid of both. They have Devin Witherspoon, but part of what made that secondary pretty good last year were those safeties. Diggs is 31, and you're paying an older defensive back can sometimes come back to bite you. Happens to everybody, but 3 straight Pro Bowls between 2020 and 2022. And even last year, I know tackles are a bad indicator, but you know what? 95 tackles, so they had him playing down in the box a little more than they had before. Only 1 interception, but the 3 years before that, 5-5-4. Guy piles up interceptions, and not in a Jordan Whitehead fluky kind of way, like in a real, like making plays, covering a ton of ground and zone coverage. Like stylistically, I think he's a great fit for the Jets. Even if he's undersized, I think he's on like 5'10". Like, I don't know how they let him go. I don't know what they're going to do to maybe they paid Stone a lot of money because of the McDonald connection, but that was really surprising. I think the Jets really, if they're not going to bring back like an Ashton Davis, they're not going to draft a guy like 3rd round. I think this is the guy you got to target.
Yeah, I'm surprised they moved on from just because they also moved on from Jamal Adams. It does seem like it's just a new regime and they're making a lot of changes. As Brian in chat says, still cross my fingers that Tyler Lockett gets released. Yeah, I mean, that's another one to keep an eye on because things are changing in Seattle. Things are changing. It's a new regime. They're making changes. So maybe he's somebody that gets let go like Diggs. The thing that stands out to me the most about Diggs, and I think that makes him the most valuable or most appealing, is dude's durable as hell. He's played in every single game over the last like 4 years or whatever. He never missed a single game while he was in Seattle. He played every game, which is obviously very valuable in the Jets.
Means he's going to come to the Jets and get hurt immediately.
I mean, that's literally that with Chuck Clark, isn't it? That is exactly. Chuck Clark had never missed a game due to injury in his entire career with the Ravens. Goes to the Jets.
Aaron Rodgers didn't miss a start for 7 years.
Yeah, man. It's brutal. But yeah, I think that's something that the Jets will value. Also, he was a well-respected leader in Seattle. One of the leaders of that locker room for his entire time there. Just a very respected veteran presence. So I think that's important. It is also notable, though, that he is coming off a bad year. Like, he was genuinely not that great last year. Again, I haven't watched all of his tape or whatever, but
he looked passable for like a starting safety from what I saw.
I've seen a lot of Seahawks fans not particularly happy with his play, and the numbers do back that up. Not only PFF. PFF had him very, very poorly graded, but he had his highest missed tackle rate during his entire time with the Seahawks. He missed 20 tackles last year, which it's a lot of missed tackles. 17.5% missed tackle rate is very bad. Also allowed 71% of targets, or is 71% completion percentage against him, a 95.4% passer rating when targeted. These are definitely these are all his worst numbers during his time with the Seahawks. So definitely seems like he took a step back, which is concerning for a guy who's going to be 31, 32. He just turned 31. So that is concerning, but I wouldn't hate it by any means. I don't know if they're going to make any, or I don't think they're going to make any kind of big additions at safety because Joe Douglas has never done that during his entire time with the Jets. He's made it very clear that it's not a position that is a high priority for him. And I don't think it necessarily should be this offseason. I think the defense is already great. My preference would just be, you don't bring back Jordan Whitehead. You bring back Ashton Davis. You bring back Chuck Clark. And then you add somebody else, a pretty, low-end free agent. It could be Diggs. I don't know what his market value is actually going to be at this stage. It's hard to say. The couple of guys that I'm looking at here, I mean, I would love if they went out and signed a Cam Curl. Like, that would be amazing. Cam Curl is probably my favorite safety target on the market because Antoine Winfield is obviously, he was tagged. Kyle Duggar was hit with the transition tag, so he's not going anywhere. Curl's probably the best safety option out there. He's much younger, but he's going to be like 13, 14 million a year. And I would be stunned if the Jets use their cap space on a safety. And honestly, I would not be happy. As much as I have been very vocal about safety not being a good position for the Jets over the last couple of years, I thought it's been a pretty big weakness. They should not be spending their capital, their resources on a high priced safety. With that in mind, a couple of names I'll throw out there. One of them I've thrown out there in the past. Darnell Savage makes a ton of sense to me. You have the Packers connection with Aaron Rodgers. He played with Rodgers, played with Hackett, whatever. Obviously, he's a defensive guy, so it's a little different. But he played pretty well last year. Like, he was kind of written off as a bust, as a first-round pick bust by the Packers. But he stayed healthy, I believe, last year. Didn't he stay healthy? I think he did. because I know he had injury. No, he missed time this past year. But before that, he was healthy. That's what I was thinking. Only played 10 games this past year, but he had played 16, 17, and 15 in the years before that. So pretty durable player. And I also think he just rebounded from a pretty rocky start to his career. Likely won't cost that much, so I'm happy with that. Another one I'll throw out there, kind of on the other end of it, the veteran end, Tashaun Gibson. I think he's going to be 34 by the time that the 2024 rolls around, that week one rolls around. But he was still good last year. Like, he graded out very well in coverage and run defense.
It seems like in the Super Bowl when he let Mecole Hardman catch that Mahomes heave.
All right, man. Well, look, everyone has their moments, okay?
Gibson's still bad time to have a moment like that.
Sure, but at least he got to the Super Bowl, man, all right? Let him get to the Super Bowl to the Jets, too. That'd be great. But it seems like Gibson still got it at this stage. He's 34, but he's still got something left in the tank. I don't think he'd be a high-end addition, but he would give the Jets more of, like, a free safety type because he can play both roles. I believe he played more free safety with the Niners than strong safety, but he obviously has experience in a very similar system. I don't believe he actually crossed paths with Robert Saleh in San Francisco, but – they ran a very similar defensive scheme in with the Niners than the Jets currently do now. So it makes a ton of sense. Bring him in, have him compete for those safety roles with Tony Adams, Chuck Clark, Ashton Davis. That would be a really good quartet of safeties to have on the roster next year.
So let's end the show with a little look back at the combine because we want to do some draft talk before we let you guys go. Mostly looking at guys who really blew up at the combine in a good way. Looking at the receivers this year, I know the conventional wisdom has always been take an offensive tackle at 10. Even if Joe Alt isn't there, Olufashanu, Talia Sifuaga, Amarius Mims, like there's going to be some guys there. That's been the conventional wisdom. I've also seen a couple guys say take a receiver because the big three pretty much are Marvin Harris. Marvin Harrison Jr. is not going to get out of the top five at minimum. No. He's locked in. Malik Nabers, who – really good, really speedy, big play guy, easy projection. And then Rome Odunze, who might be my wide receiver too. I mean, just big, fluid, really good hands, fast enough, like everything you can want in a receiver. Like those three guys look like top 10 locks. So the conventional wisdom is if one of them falls to 10, you take them. If not, you go O-line. And I go, okay, that makes sense. Then I'm starting to watch Brian Thomas from LSU, who I think has kind of separated himself as wide receiver 4. And then there's like everybody else, like, you know, Xavier Worthy, Adonai Mitchell, like that's Keon Coleman, like that sort of third.
Ladd McConkey, my guy, Ladd McConkey.
Ladd McConkey or Xavier Leggett, my guy, who actually moved really well for his size in the combine. But I'm looking at Brian Thomas, and I came away not only impressed, but so impressed that I think he should be in play at 10. Like I think he's that good.
We're getting spicy takes. That's a hot take, Mike.
I know he doesn't have the best footwork. I know that he's 6'4", and he doesn't always play like he's 6'4". And I get that LSU's offense with Nabers on the other side and Jane Daniel. I get that they can inflate his numbers. But this is a guy, for as great as Xavier Worthy was with the whole 40-yard dash, I mean, relative athletic score, Brian Thomas was better.
Yeah, he killed it.
3,063 receivers have relative athletic scores, RASs. He's number 10 all time.
Yeah.
Because he ran a 4.34, which is Xavier Worthy. If he ran a 4.34, that would have been impressive. Brian Thomas did that, and he's 6'3", 210. And he had a 153 10-yard split. That's insane speed. And he's a big guy. Like, I don't think people are really properly contextualizing how great Brian Thomas was at the combine. And you know what? Tape backs it up. He's fast, makes some amazing catches. Mobility's really good. Like he ran a full route tree. You can have him do whatever you want. Like I'm surprised that more people don't have him higher up their board. I've seen like, you know, late teens, maybe early 20s. Like I think he might be a top 15 player on my big board by the time it's all said and done.
I think he's just somebody who's getting overlooked in such a great wide receiver.
Because they're all chalking up to Nabers too. Like, oh, well,
he gets, and that's why a guy like, you know, Jalen Polk gets overlooked because his teammate was amazing because Rome Odunze was great. It's just such a good wide receiver class that there are going to be guys who fall. Now, 10 feels high for me, especially for the Jets given their needs. Like, I don't think I can get on board with that. I'd be very surprised. I don't think, okay,
if they get tackles in free agency.
Yeah, I don't want to say I can't get on board with that. It would be very surprising at this stage, but I could absolutely talk myself into Brian Thomas at 10. I would just be very surprised if they did that. But I mean, he checks the boxes for me. Like, he can separate as well as anybody. And I think he's a little unrefined as a route runner, but because he's such an insane athlete and because he can use his body, he can separate. Like, he can absolutely separate. Dude's a freak. He was, what, he's 6'3", 6'4", and you're at a 4'3", 3'3". Like, that's nuts.
The Ole Miss game was like, it was like torture from watching those Ole Miss defensive backs try to stop him.
It's not just this isn't just Denzel Mims straight line speed. Like, he's got agility as well. So I do really like Brian Thomas. I think he's still wide receiver 4 for me, but it's such a great class. Like, they're all great. They're all so good. I would be very surprised if he was the pick at 10 at this stage, but it's possible. And I appreciate you throwing it out there, cause I don't think I've seen anyone else say that. And I've seen people be like Keon Coleman at 10. So I would much rather have Brian Thomas
saying that.
That was said like a month ago. I was wrote in an article. It was like,
oh, okay, a month ago. Okay. I thought you meant like now.
I said this on Twitter. Keon Coleman ticks all of my red flags for a wide receiver prospect. I am not a fan.
The thing, though, is too, like, people ripped on him for the 40 speed, and then doing the gauntlet drill, he was like the fastest guy.
He was. Well, it's weird because his 10-yard split was really good. And then after that, it just tanks. So he's like, all right, so at first he's really fast, but then he can't maintain it. So,
well, I guess the thought is you're going to be doing more, you know,
agreed,
routes where you run 10 yards than 40 yards.
So. The 10-yard split is more important. I just don't see that 10-yard split on film at all. Like, I do
when he gets the ball. It's like he gets faster when he gets the ball. It's weird.
Sure, but the route running, the separation is just not there, and the drop issues with him. I'm not a Keon Coleman fan.
N'Keal Harry wasn't as good as a ball carrier. He is.
You're right. I've seen the Keon Coleman archetype fail so often in the NFL that I don't want to be fooled with this one. So I'm just going to say, no, I don't want Keon Coleman.
Brian Thomas is that. He's just a little faster.
He is. He's a better route runner. He separates better. He separates a lot better than Keon Coleman. That's the, like, again, I've said this before. The number one thing I'm looking for is, can you separate? If you could separate, you're already like high on my board. That is by far the most important thing that I care about in any wide receiver prospect. I don't care if you can, like, to me, honestly, a red flag is when you're talking about a wide receiver, if you say that their best trait is contested catching, that's already like red flag to me. I'm like, okay, what else can they do? Like, is that that's their thing? Well, nobody really in the NFL is going to be great if their best thing is that they're contested catch receivers. Like, sure, you got guys like Ja'Marr Chase is an awesome contested catch receiver, but he can do a lot of other things too. And I would never say that his greatest strength is contested catching. But anyway, I digress. Side points there. I've talked about receivers a lot, so I'm not going to talk about a wide receiver this week. I want to talk about an offensive lineman who I think really, really helped themselves at the combine, and it's Cooper Beebe from Kansas State. 3-year starter at Kansas State. He is the 2-time defending Big 12 Offensive Lineman of the Year. He won it in 2022 and 2023. One of the most experienced and just, I would say, technically sound offensive linemen in this draft class. He started his first year at left tackle, then he went over to left guard in 2022 and 2023. He has experience playing all 4 offensive line spots except for center, although he's definitely going to be a guard at the next level. He's not a tackle. He just doesn't have the length for that. But dude is a mauler in the run game. Like, I've had so much fun watching him play because it's just, it reminds me of Mekhi Becton a little bit, where it's just like, he doesn't just like block dudes. Like, he sends them into another stratosphere. Like, he just mauls dudes, and it's great to watch. The biggest question mark with him going into the combine was functional athleticism. It was, you know, he's a really well-refined offensive lineman. He's experienced. He's versatile enough. But is he a good athlete? Well, he registered a 9.71 RAS, which was like, I don't know, like 40th best all time amongst all guards, something like that. He killed it. He absolutely killed it at the combine. So I think any of the concerns about the athleticism were put to bed there. And as a result, he's probably skyrocketing up draft boards. And I've seen a lot of people talking about him as like a fringe second round, third round pick. Mike, tell me why he's not a top 50 player. Why is Cooper Beebe not a top 50?
Well, I can tell you why.
All right, go for it. What do you
he's
got?
He's got, like, I think just physically, I know he's going to be a guard, but, like, he is kind of, like, squat in that he doesn't have great length.
That's fine.
He did kind of move around a lot. I guess some people see that as an asset. Some people don't, because it's like, well, where do you play? And it's like, well, you develop some at tackle, some at guard. It's like,
he played most of the last 2 seasons at left guard. Like,
he also has tackle experience. It's a little bit of like jack of all trades, master of none sort of thing, where like they keep moving him around.
And that feels nitpicky, but all right.
It's nitpicky. Like, I don't care about it personally, but scouts might and teams might. Like, I see that as an asset, but some people might be like, well, we want you to be like some scouts done this. We want you to be a guard and that's it. Like
that's fine. And he's been a left guard the last 2 years.
And the other thing is basic, it's pass protection because Kansas State was like a 60-40 running team. When they did throw back, even though they had Will Howard, who's going to be an NFL draft prospect next year. When they did drop back, you saw like if he didn't beat you with the bull rush, like just with raw power immediately, like there was some legitimate falling. If you had any sort of like quick technique, if you got like a good jump off him, you could get past him. So good player. I'd like him on the Jets. I'd certainly think if he's available when they pick third, if they don't address guard, I think I'd like him on the team. He reminds me of like Brian Winters a little bit. And Brian Winters had a solid Jets career. Now, the thing, though, with BB is I just want to see him get a little – like, he had good athleticism. I want to see his footwork get a little bit choppier, and I want to see him get better in pass pro. The only problem is there's no opportunity to get better in pass pro between now and when he plays his rookie season, so it's a little bit of a risk.
I think the footwork is a genuine concern. Like, that's something that it kind of coincides with.
It's very plodding. It's very slow.
Yeah, well, because he's so stout. He's, like, just a little bowling ball out there. Like, I get that. I don't think the versatility thing is an issue. He played the vast majority. He played 919 snaps at left guard in 2022 and only 21 snaps at left tackle. Last year, he played 819 snaps at left guard and 100 snaps at right tackle. Like he's a left guard. He's played left guard the last 2 years. He has experience playing all four offensive line spots.
He played center too early on.
What? Not in college, at least not in a game, according to I'm looking at PFF
stuff. Okay, maybe I'm remembering a different prospect then.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of PFF, he's also the highest graded guard of any guard in this class by PFF. He had allowed 2 sacks overall in his entire college career. No, both of them came last year. He only allowed 2 hits over the last 2 seasons during his entire time as a starting guard. I know they ran the ball a lot, but that still seems like somebody who's pretty sound in pass protection to me. I get that the footwork can be a concern, but I think that he did a lot at the combine to show that he is a really good athlete. And when you have that athleticism, the footwork can absolutely be worked on. So I think he's someone who I think he's a day one starter at left guard in the NFL. I think he can step in as a day one starter for the Jets. If they were to draft him, he's your left guard immediately right there. I think that they should have somebody, you know, a veteran to bring in there. As well, maybe they bring back Connor McGovern or whoever. Speaking of Connor McGovern, by the way, the Bills are moving Connor McGovern to center. So we're going to have 2 Connor McGoverns playing center next year, which that's really funny.
Potentially against each other.
Yeah, because the Bills are releasing Mitch Morse, who could be an option for the Jets. I don't think they go that route. Obviously, he's a center, so he'd be playing there, and they move Tippmann to guard. He also has so many concussions throughout his career. So that's something
where he doesn't in the offensive line.
Morse is like not to be like this, but he's like a concussion away from like seriously questioning his career. Like it's he's had a lot of bad concussions, but I really love Cooper Beebe. I think that at this point his stock is right there in the second round. Like I don't think he makes it to the third round where the Jets are picking. I think they'd have to move up in the third round or move back. Yeah, as Brian said in the chat, Keith Carter's the perfect coach to teach a young impressionable guard. Hey man, look, when this coaching staff's fired after next year and Cooper Beebe is still here, the next O-line coach can coach him up.
If Cooper Beebe's good, that probably means they're going to start winning. They're going to get to the playoffs and they're not going to.
I don't know if the left guard is going to be the determining factor for that. But
baseline, they'd have 10 wins last year if Rodgers didn't get hurt because there were at least 3 direct games they would have won with him.
Yes, sure. So, I mean, there's a lot that goes into it. Obviously, they got lucky in some games too. But yeah,
the Raiders game.
Sure. Yeah. But we'll talk about that more as the year goes on. But Cooper Beebe, that's my guy. I hope that they draft him. Him and Jackson Powers Johnson are like the 2 interior guys that I would love to see the Jets somehow find a way to land, even though they're probably going to go before the Jets can pick in the third round.
So I think we're going to call time on this episode. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. We had a lot of people on Twitter today, so thank you so much for that. Very appreciative. As always, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, while it's still around. Spotify, Overcast, wherever you get your podcasts. We are on all those sites, YouTube and TikTok at the Jet Press for both. Justin.
Dude, shout out Overcast for outliving Google Podcast. Who saw that coming? I haven't even heard of that.
You can't kill me.
I hadn't even heard of Overcast before we started doing this. So shout out Overcast. Obviously, next week is free agency. It starts the legal tampering period starts on Monday. So we'll have to see what we're doing with next week's show. We're going to discuss this literally live on air. We should have talked about it before, but we might have to move the time because like free agency will officially start next Wednesday at 4 p.m. So we'll maybe move it up an hour or two or something like that.
We'll do a Tuesday or something. I don't know.
We'll do a Tuesday. I don't know. We'll figure it out. We'll figure out something. But next time we're on the show, we are going to be talking about Jets free agency and guys that not only guys that they're targeting, but maybe guys they've already signed. Maybe we'll be breaking down a Kendrick Bourne sign, dude. If the Jets sign Kendrick Bourne, I'm
just gonna not root against the Jet, but like because I just feel bad because of like how bullish I was on Lazard and how much it flopped. Like I need you to have your Lazard moment.
No. Don't you dare put that on Kendrick Bourne. How dare Kendrick Bourne is so much safer than Lazard. The only way Kendrick Bourne would not work out with the Jets is if unfortunately he got hurt again. I will put money on that.
Why don't you kiss him instead of talking him to death, Justin?
It's become a meme. I have to play into the meme now at this point. I will legit put money on Kendrick Bourne if he signed with the Jets being good, barring injury. Also, we mentioned this for the show. I'll put money on the Jets signing a veteran running back. We didn't get to talk about it today, but I think the Jets are almost guaranteed to sign a veteran running back. Maybe we'll talk about that next week if they haven't already. But anyway, all of that being said, we will be back here next week talking about, you know, the latest going ons in the Jets world, the latest going ons in free agency. Until then, thank you all for joining us on the show today. You can follow Mike on Twitter at @ByMikeLuciano. Follow me on Twitter at Justin T. Freed. Follow the Jet Press at the Jet Press. Download the Jet Press podcast wherever you get your podcast. Apparently not Google Podcasts for long. Check us out on YouTube and TikTok. Subscribe, like, hit that notification bell. You guys know what to do. We stream live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern time. Maybe not next week. We'll see. Until then, thank you all for listening to Jet Press Podcast. I've been Justin Freed. That has been Mike Luciano. We'll see you guys next week.
And we'll see you folks when free agency finally gets going.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.